Dateline, February 15, 2011. Capcom finally learns to count to three. Again. Does everyone know the expression, jump the shark? It's a phrase made famous by a website in 1997, derived from a then 20 years old episode of Happy Days. And it is often misinterpreted. When a series jumps the shark, that doesn't mean everything that follows is bad, or that the end is near. It just means that the show slash franchise slash person's best days are behind them. For many years, fans argued that The Simpsons was so consistently good, it was a rare example of a serial work that never jumped. But as the show is now in its 32nd season, we can all agree it jumped at some point to end up in the state it's in now. My money's still on the death of Maud Flanders. Around this time last year, we celebrated in this column the 20th anniversary of Marvel vs. Capcom 2. And I declared it was a clear signifier that the 2D boom of fighting games was on the way out. I also said it was a jump the shark moment for the series, even though I acknowledged its many strengths and its lasting popularity to this day. How could a game so beloved be a shark jumper? Because it would be 11 years before Capcom would make a sequel. A sequel which is now 10 years old this week. Marvel vs. Capcom 3. And while it's a solid game with a good reputation, it fails to reach the soaring heights of its predecessors. Without recounting my own words too much. Marvel vs. Capcom 2 was released at the end of a very fruitful period of Capcom fighting game releases. Between the Street Fighter Alpha series, the Marvel series, the Darkstalkers series, and a few miscellaneous games, the Osaka company had created dozens and dozens of appealing characters for players to pit against one another. MVC 2 had a decent number of brand new fighters, but it was largely built using pre-existing assets, which is why it was able to sport an absurdly large roster of 56 characters. 11 years later, Capcom was riding high on the recent success of Street Fighter 4, a 2D game built with 3D models instead of 2D sprites. All those 2D series mentioned above were dead and buried in 2011, so there was no library of art assets to work with. This necessitated a smaller roster of characters than MVC2, but Capcom did not phone it in. Marvel vs. Capcom 3 sports 38 playable characters, including two paid DLC additions, only four of whom were taken from Street Fighter 4. Character choice is what makes crossover games like Marvel vs. Capcom 3 exciting, and most of the choices here are exceptional. Past Versus games had leaned too hard on Street Fighter, but that's not the case here. For the home team, Capcom made sure to include a variety of fighters from the company's long history. Heroes from the 1980s like Arthur and Mike Hagar represent Capcom's arcade past alongside more recent console creations like Dante and Trish from Devil May Cry. I was pleased to see three Darkstalkers made the cut, even if Capcom looked at a series about monsters and chose only babes that likely sell a lot of merchandise. And Icarus was in Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Damn it, I want my mummy. Speaking of sales, one of the more glaring corporate choices was giving three character slots to Resident Evil stars Jill Valentine, Chris Redfield, and Albert Wesker. Marvel vs. Capcom 3 came out just 2 years after Resident Evil 5, which was, at the time, the company's most successful game ever made. As a fan of that series, I was excited. Jill was in Marvel vs. Capcom 2 after all. But as a fighting game fan, I think including three human beings who look similar and all carry realistic guns excludes weirder, wilder candidates. Relatedly, I was hyped that Rad Spencer from Bionic Commando joined the cast, but deflated when I realized his character model was based on his gritty 3D reboot from 2009. Anyone looking for his classic 2D appearance, or even his revamped look from Rearm 2, had to pay for a DLC costume. On the Marvel side, there's a lot to be thankful for. Aside from a few perennial selections like Spider-Man and Wolverine, who were mainstays of the 2D games, Capcom elected to add a number of glorious lesser-known fighters like She-Hulk, Super Skrull, and Taskmaster. The most far-out choice has to be MODOK, a supervillain who's more head than torso, and the bizarre type of Marvel foe who may never make the transition to live action. But if he does, I sincerely hope John Hodgman gets the part. Hands down, though, the best addition to the cast is Deadpool. 5 full years before his hit movie would make him a household name, Deadpool was an anti-hero fan favorite who fits in perfectly amongst fighting game characters, since he carries both guns and swords. Better still, his penchant for jokey dialogue and fourth wall breaking antics is on full display in Marvel vs. Capcom 3. For an air combo launcher attack, Deadpool can mimic Ryu's famous Dragon Punch, even saying, "Shuriken!" in the voice of the great Nolan North. And as a super move, he can grab his own super meter from the bottom of the screen and use it like a club to bash his opponent. After the previous two games made no attempt to offer any story or explanation as to why comic book characters are fighting video game characters, Marvel vs. Capcom 3 actually comes up with a clever concept. The full title of the game is Marvel vs. Capcom 3 Fate of Two Worlds, because the Capcom and Marvel worlds are being threatened by the ultimate cosmic foe of the Marvel Universe, Galactus. This was a major upgrade from Marvel vs. Capcom 2's final boss Abyss, a character Capcom invented who carried zero weight with fans of either property. Galactus, for those unfamiliar, is a giant man in a fantastic hat who devours planets whole. His size is scaled down somewhat to make this last battle more sensible, but it's still one where the player has 60 seconds to deal sufficient damage to a very tall man before he destroys Earths. Many of the past Capcom Marvel games have used Beat Up Giant for a finale, going all the way back to Apocalypse in X-Men vs. Street Fighter, but this one carries the extra stinger of a failure screen where the bad guy crushes all our hopes and dreams. Personally, I wish this scene could be skipped, since it's not an easy fight, and by the third or fourth straight loss, I was sick of sitting through it, but maybe that's just me being famously bad at video games. A revival of a dormant fighting game series featuring a solid lineup of popular characters sounds like a ringing endorsement for Marvel vs. Capcom 3, and at launch, that's what we all felt. But then just 5 months later, Capcom threw the game into the trash, and announced that Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 would be out by year's end. Ultimate MVC 3 was not a sequel, it was a new and improved version of the game with even more characters and features. Its existence overwrote the game we had just bought for full price. And even though I enjoyed MVC 3, I felt like I had been had. In an era where adding to and improving upon video games via downloadable upgrades was already an acceptable practice, why would Capcom hit the reset button and ask fans to pony up for the deluxe edition so soon? Officially, the story is that all the Ultimate Editions were going to be sold online for Marvel vs. Capcom 3, but once the 311 earthquake and tsunami happened, Capcom was forced to change gears and just release a new game instead. I might have believed that story if Capcom hadn't just asked me the year prior to buy Super Street Fighter 4, after I had already purchased Street Fighter 4, pledging that it would be the final version of that game, only to later release Ultra Street Fighter 4. This is crossing into griping about money, which shouldn't detract from the experience of actually playing a video game, but I don't think I was alone in feeling exhausted by all these incremental adjustments to games I already owned, being sold to me and resold to me. If Capcom wanted to go full King of Fighters and make annual releases, they could do that. Lord knows I have purchased far more Neo Geo cartridges in my life than my meager income could ever have covered. But at least those games were new entries in a series, and each year's release had noticeable differences than the last. KOF 2000 is different than 99, which is different than 98. Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 is just the better game, and today it is the only one commercially available on modern platforms, because why would you bother with the non-Ultimate version? All financial matters aside, I'm also still stubborn about the 2D made with 3D concept. Every character looks oddly dark, as no one seems to be fully lit, leaving shadows everywhere that I'd rather not see. For a game theme that outwardly celebrates so much about comic books. I think Marvel vs. Capcom 3 should lean into that and be bright and colorful. You know, like all the 2D games were. I don't think it's a technical problem, I think it's an art direction problem. Street Fighter 4 also had heavy brushstrokes on screen, but it was more stylized and a lot less grim. Marvel vs. Capcom 3 is a good game. It is, but it cannot hold a candle to the madcap mayhem that was Marvel vs. Capcom 2. It's possible to enjoy MVC 3 on its own merits, but only if you forget that Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 exists. But of course, that's the only version I can play today. On my Vita, it was a launch title, so that's not an option. Hence my lamentation about jumping over sharks and a general sense of disappointment whenever MVC 3 comes to mind. But hey, even with its short lifespan, Marvel vs. Capcom 3 Fate of Two Worlds will always have a better reputation than the fiasco that was Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite. Nuff said. Thank you for listening to this audio version of my latest This Week in Retro column, a Retronauts exclusive for our Patreon supporters. My name is Diamond Fight, and you can follow me on Twitter at FEITCLUB. Good night!
I wanna take you for a ride.